Every week on the Moth Podcast, you'll hear true stories that will intrigue you, inspire you, and make you laugh.
He said, is there anything in your diet that might be spiking your blood sugar? I said, sometimes I eat pizza until I'm unconscious. He said, I think that might be it.
For real stories live on stage from comedians, astronauts, accountants, farmers, and people just like you, follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the Dork Podcast. It's the Dork Podcast.
Rich Keith.
It's the Dork Podcast.
Hashtag.
It's the hashtag Dork Podcast.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Hashtag Dork. My name is Rich Keefe, joined as always by Ryan Davey. Davey, how are you?
I'm having a wonderful night, Richard. How are you?
I'm having a great night as well. Ryan, we are less than 6 weeks away until our very next live show.
Is that right? 6 weeks?
Under 6 weeks. April 7th. So hopefully everybody out there has saved the date. April 7th at Idle Hands, we will be previewing Avengers Endgame, which we are very excited. Oh, and by the way, also out this week is the Triforce auction movie draft for 2019.
Sure is.
The Mac and Goo podcast, the Boxers podcast, and the Hashtag Dork podcast, Ryan.
Yeah, and the reigning champs, mind
the
you.
Reigning, defending, undisputed movie draft champions, Hashtag Dork. We're going for two in a row. Nobody's ever won back-to-back titles in this.
We've only done it for 2 years, so no one's won back-to-back.
This is the third year now, and so you got to go over to Mac and Goo for that. So check out Mac and Goo on iTunes or wherever else. Listen to the episode. Don't want to spoil it too much, but we won. We clearly...
Oh, yeah, clearly it's not even a question. Yeah. Like, if you want to, it's a pretty sizable episode, too.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well over 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
We could have done it in parts, I think, you know. But if you want to save yourself some time, we won.
Where do you come down on that, by the way? For people who listen to podcasts, ours are always an hour or right around an hour. I honestly don't give a shit how long they are because I listen to them in bursts anyway. Like, I either listen to them walking the dog or in the summer mowing the lawn or, you know, usually on my way home. On my way into work, I'm listening to sports radio. On the way home, at that point, I've already kind of exhausted it, and so I'm usually listening to it on the way home. So I don't really care if the episode is 20 minutes or 3 hours. I don't care. Do you care?
I don't. I listen to podcasts passively when I do other things. So if I'm like doing dishes or I'm like lesson planning or I'm doing something that I would normally do, sometimes I listen when I'm actually, this is weird to say, but if I'm playing video games and it's not anything that requires me listening.
Yeah, there's a certain type of game that you can do that with.
Yeah, like if I'm playing like a racing game or something where I don't necessarily have to know what's going on around me, like I can, I pop on a podcast. Plus, I have those bone conduction headphones, which I can like listen I can listen to other stuff while I'm listening to a podcast, which is kind of nice.
That's pretty good. Not to brag, Ryan, but I've been trying to go to the gym over the last several months.
You and me
that's
both, man.
That's another time where I'll pop it on, you know, and I'll just be walking around aimlessly.
And there were times, you know, you and I would throw on some Pantera, some Tool, some Marilyn Manson or Insane Clown Posse if you're you. Right.
And now
look at us.
Now I'm listening to Mac and Goo while
listening
I'm on the
to a podcast.
Like a real schlep to play that much. All right, Ryan, what do you say we get to the news?
Hit it.
Congratulations on a very successful Oscars viewing party on your Twitch stream.
Oh, thank you very much. We were holding steady around 20 people, which I never usually do.
Pretty good.
It was great, and we had a fun time. It seemed natural. Thank you for coming in for a little bit.
Thought I'd jump in. I felt underdressed. You guys really did a nice job.
Really
it was a
black
tie affair.
Yeah.
You and your wife just commenting on the Oscars from start to finish.
We did the whole thing. Seamless.
I'll tell you what, and maybe it helped that you guys were there and I was following along on Twitch all night, but I thought I didn't know how it was going to go without a host. Pretty smooth show. I didn't mind. I didn't miss the host.
No, I didn't miss like this whole stupid musical act that they would have in the beginning. I didn't miss any of that. It was fine. And the people who presented were entertaining enough where you didn't really miss the whole thing.
You could throw in a couple of jokes. Like they opened up Tina Fey, Amy Poehler, Maya Rudolph. Yep. They later got to like John Mulaney. They did the thing with Melissa McCarthy. They always do like the wardrobe, the best ever wardrobe one or makeup one.
Yeah,
was when Ben Stiller dressed up as the fucking creature from Avatar.
That
and
was
his
a good
eyes
one,
were just so creepy. And it's like being dead serious. Like that was actually really funny. But anyway, the Oscars were good. Now I really liked Green Book, but apparently it's a very controversial winner, which I didn't realize going into it. And then after, there's really been a lot of backlash against it.
Well, I think it was this whole thing. I think you mentioned it when we were hosting the Oscars. The Davey family was hosting the Oscars. Let's not kid ourselves.
That's right.
But you were talking about how, or it might have been in the chat, or someone was talking about like how like this movie about diversity was made by a whole bunch of old white guys.
Yes, that is true.
Which is the thing that like upset a lot of people, you know.
And there's definitely, I guess, and I guess a lot of it coming out is like it's one of these movies where it's like, oh, like the white guy saves the black guy situation.
Right. Yeah.
And I suppose that is true if that's what your takeaway is. I guess it's hard to argue, but I mean, I could even look at it the other way too, and I could say that the black character in this movie, in a way, kind of saved the white character. Not that the white character needed saving as much. Like, you know, I don't want to spoil the whole thing, but what I'm saying is you can almost make a counter argument for it, but I don't know. Tons of backlash though for it. I happen to enjoy it. I watched 7 of the 8 by the end of it. Best Picture nominated movies. That Black Panther, Black Klansman would have been the 3 that I would have been happy with winning. The other ones, I would have said no freaking chance.
How about, and people are a flutter on Twitter about this, about Bohemian Rhapsody winning best editing and everyone shows that one scene where they have like it's an insane amount of cuts.
Yeah, the scene with Littlefinger.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. That movie was not great, and then the editing wasn't, and then Rami Malek, this is also pretty polarizing, because on the one hand, I think he did do a pretty good job, but on the other hand, he lip synced. What would you say?
I've always said lip synced, but I now love lip sync, and I'm going to use that forever now.
So there you go. There's one. So he lip synced in the movie, and like some of the best parts in the movie were like the songs, but it's because you remember the songs, right? And because Queen is a good band.
Sure.
So anyway, I don't know about that one. I liked Viggo Mortensen a lot, but again, that movie apparently has problems. Then Olivia Colman from The Favorite won Best Actress, and she had a pretty funny acceptance speech.
She was pretty funny. She was all of us. I mean, if someone put you in front of that room full of people and said like speak.
It was so funny. Like at the end of it, she just like looks in the crowd. She's like, Lady Gaga. Yeah. It's like those people I like. The people that go up there and make it out to be like acting is the most important job in the world. Those people I hate.
Well, they start talking about the craft and all that stuff.
And just like how important it is and like the work that they do. I'm like, all right, Jesus.
Can you not? Yeah.
But Olivia Colman went up there and just had like a freaking great time.
She started talking about the job. She used to be like a maid.
Yeah. And I loved it. And you're like, okay, fair enough. Mm-hmm. And now she's a good actress. And then what else? Any other thing jump out at you from the Oscars?
Well, we have to talk about, you know, Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga making sweet, sweet love on stage, basically.
It's almost too much at this point. I mean, like, I've seen them perform before, and it's like clearly they're into each other. And then Lady Gaga and her fiance are no longer together. However, Bradley Cooper and his girlfriend, they have at least one kid together.
Yeah.
And she was like, so his girlfriend is like a former, or maybe she's a current Russian, like supermodel who used to go out with Cristiano Ronaldo.
Yes.
So I mean, that's a hot, hot couple.
Yeah.
But anyway, they're in the front row and she's sitting in between Cooper and Lady Gaga. I'm like, this has got to be so uncomfortable.
So uncomfortable. Especially when Lady Gaga is just like eye raping Bradley Cooper the entire time.
Honest question, do you think Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga have made love?
No, I don't think they have. And I think that's the thing. It's the tension thing. They've simulated love making, but they have not actually physically done the deed.
My initial thought was, yes, they have. But you're right. I think for it to be there's so much fire between the two of them, it has to be one of those, like, we haven't done it yet.
Did you get the sense that he was getting a little uncomfortable with the whole thing? Because she was just nonstop with the energy. Yeah.
Oh, so much so. And then at the end, she had like this whole comment, like there's a quote about how just could not be singing the praises more of Bradley Cooper.
And what was crazy to me is like he was like looking out. There were times where he was like looking out at the crowd, that he was like looking at the piano, looking at the microphone. She was just laser focused on him the entire time.
Yeah.
Super uncomfortable.
Man, that's weird.
Yeah.
Do you think they'll work together again in something?
Oh, God, yeah. She'll demand it. She will demand it. Whatever her next film project is, he's directing it.
But they, I think, will get together at some point.
They have to, right?
Just because that's one of those, I mean, a lot of movie stars end up dating the people that they're in movies with. Like Angelina Jolie did that like a bunch of times.
Sure did.
You know,
home Billy wrecker. Bob,
home wrecker. Yeah, it was like but before that it was like Johnny Lee Miller.
It was Johnny Lee Miller and Hackers. Then it was Billy Bob Thornton. Then it was Brad Pitt.
And then no, but also there was somebody else in there.
Oh, it was Banderas? Was it Antonio Banderas?
Angelina Jolie, was she with Ethan Hawke? Maybe.
Maybe.
No, maybe that's just in a movie. But anyway, yeah, you can look into that. There's a few.
There's a few.
Ryan, also the same weekend was the Razzies, which we have said multiple times would be a more fun show to watch anyway than sure. The Oscars. The worst picture went to Holmes and Watson.
Rightfully so, from what I've heard. Haven't seen it, yeah. But yeah.
The worst director was also from Holmes and Watson. The worst actor, this is kind of a cop-out, it went to Donald Trump for Death of a Nation in... and Fahrenheit 11/9. Like
that's kind of lame.
Like, that doesn't really count, yeah. Guys.
If it's a documentary that's like news footage, like that doesn't really count.
John C. Reilly won Worst Supporting Actor, and then of course Melissa McCarthy won Worst Actress for both The Happy Time Murders and Life of the Party.
How do you feel about that?
I feel like Life of the Party. Actually, you know what? At first I was like, oh, Life of the Party must have sucked. I actually saw Life of the Party, and it did suck. I feel like Happy Time Murder, she had a couple of really excellent lines.
Maybe.
You know how I feel about Happy Time Murder.
Maybe.
Maybe. I'll suck your dick for 50 cents. Well, that's a great price. Almost makes me wish I had a dick. And that's worst actress material? Please.
Please.
Who's voting on this shit?
Please.
Come on. Ryan, I don't know if you saw this. This is Netflix news. I feel like we have Netflix news every week. The Haunting of Hill House is getting a season 2, but it's going to be called The Haunting of Bly Manor, coming to your Netflix in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
Any interest in that?
I do. I'm interested in this. And what I would love to see, and I hope they do it, I hope they bring one of the people from Hill House to Bly Manor.
Yeah,
who do you think I want to see?
Oh, Thea.
Oh, God, do I want to see more Theo.
Yeah, I do. Oh, Theo. Yeah, Theo. Oh, I'd like to see Theo, sure.
Like, she can, like, go in and talk to this family, whatever, and talk about her experiences and be the link between the two.
Yeah,
but her husband's the showrunner, so she has to show up somehow,
she's
got to
be in there.
Yeah,
and then she can, like, touch them, kind of like Rogue does, like, you know, skin to skin, and then she'll know all their deep, dark secrets.
Mm-hmm.
I like that very much so. Also on Netflix, we know that The Punisher's been canceled. Eminem was very pissed. He had an all caps tweet,
which you know he means
to
it.
Netflix. So he was obviously quite mad, saying they made a huge mistake canceling The Punisher. And then John Bernthal responded and was like, "You're the man, Em."
Yeah,
I'm like, okay,
yeah. If Eminem tweets about you, you respond, right? If Eminem ever added you, how quickly would you respond?
Well, it depends on when I woke up from passing out,
right? And you cleaned yourself up from pissing your pants.
Yeah. From whatever mess I made, then I would have to wrap my head around it, and then I would respond, yes, in kind. Ryan, this is a movie that I do not want to see, but I probably will see. That'd be Space Jam 2, comes out July 16th, 2021.
That's a long
way.
So
we're ways
away
from that. But I hate LeBron James with the fury of 1,000 angry people, and so I hope this movie is trash. I think he sucks. I can't stand him, but here we are.
Ryan Coogler directing. Lola Bunny's back.
Lola Bunny's in it. Yeah.
Lola Bunny's in it. So does it get a whiff from you then?
Nah, not in the theater.
What if it scores over 75? What is the score on Rotten Tomatoes it needs to get for you to see it?
110.
110? You won't see, if it's like 88%, you won't check it? You won't give it a look?
Nope, not in the theater.
What if Bill Murray's in it?
Not in the theater. I'm not giving my money to LeBron James.
So many other people have, right?
I know. Please, he doesn't need it, and I'm not going to take part in that.
I'm one of those people that, and I don't want to. You talk enough sports, so I don't want to get too into this, but I am on the fence with LeBron James. Like, there are some things he does. Wait, hang on. He does some things that are like incredibly generous, incredibly like philanthropic. Like, he opened that school and gave all those kids like bikes and did all that like wonderful stuff.
Yeah, but
look into that.
Look into that. How much money he actually put into that? But anyway,
okay. But they on paper, like, he does things like that, and then he does like the next day does like the biggest douchebag thing ever, like in a game.
He's on an incredible run right now where he's not playing defense. He's not giving a shit at all. And yet every post game, he's talking about how the guys on the team like don't understand what it takes.
Yeah.
And how he's in playoff mode right now, and yet he's not trying. And then he's getting mad, even though this is the team that he decided to go to.
Yeah,
and it's like just a joke. And then
I saw that clip of someone like throwing up a three-pointer, bricking it, and him just like walking back on defense.
Yeah.
Like in disgust.
Like annoyed that the guy missed. It's like, guess what? You've missed a lot too this year. And right now they're going to miss the playoffs, which is amazing.
That's incredible.
I love it. And then Portnoy has been all over this on Barstool too with some of the stuff where post-game he's throwing everybody under the bus, you know, saying you know they're selfish and all this stuff. And then he literally goes home and posts something on Instagram, LeBron does, about how he's the first guy to, like, however many points and assists. And you're like, oh, my God.
Now, the real person who's getting killed in all this is Luke Walton. Like, that guy had a good thing going in L.A., and now he's going to get fired because LeBron doesn't like him.
Wants another guy.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Unbelievable.
But anyway, that's sports. Hey, Ryan. Did you see that there's like a teaser for The Irishman?
Yes.
Which is a Martin Scorsese film.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to have Robert De Niro, Al Pacino, Joe Pesci, who hasn't been in shit in forever, and Harvey Keitel all in this movie. Are these guys too past their prime?
Yes.
Unfortunately, you may be right.
Scorsese, what was Scorsese's last movie?
Did he do Wolf of Wall Street?
He did, but was that his last one?
Nah, may not have been his last one.
Regardless, that movie sucked. I don't care if that people think that's a hot take. That movie sucks.
No, we've talked about it. I do not care for that movie.
Both Pacino and De Niro haven't been in a good movie in 10 years. Neither one of them.
Well, but have you seen Dirty Grandpa?
I have not, but that was intentional. And so Pesci, they're pulling Pesci off the shelf just to like get people to come see this
Pesci's
movie.
Pesci's in it. He did a movie called Silence in 2016, which I didn't see. Wolf of Wall Street was 2013, and he did Hugo in 2011.
Yeah, like so Wolf of Wall Street's his last movie. Like, get out of here, dude. You're done. Like, this is like old stuff that I just don't care about anymore, you know? If I want to see that movie, I'll watch Goodfellas. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or
the
Casino.
Last movie,
or Heat.
The last movie that Joe Pesci was in. So he was in a movie where he was just the voice, but forget that one. He was in a movie called Love Ranch in 2010.
Yeah, it's been
prior to that, it was The Good Shepherd.
Yeah, I saw
that.
And
those are the only movies he's been in the 2000s.
That was one of those movies, The Good Shepherd. Was that the one with Matt Damon and Angelina Jolie, where he was like this head of the, he started the CIA?
Yes.
And it was the most boring movie ever.
Well, De Niro actually directed that one.
Yeah, but so he
produced and directed it.
Yeah, and he was in it for like 10 minutes, but it was the most boring movie I've ever seen.
Yeah, I think sneaky, like not in very many movies.
Matt Damon was in like every scene of that movie, and I think he said like 5 words the entire movie.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Yikes. Anyway, that's all the news that's fit to print. Ryan, should we get to your news?
Sure.
All right. It's time for Davey's Video Game Minute. Even if it takes more than a minute. What do you have?
So I got two big releases this week that I've kind of been keeping my eye on. One of them is called Metro Exodus. If you've played the Metro movies, the Metro games, they've always intrigued me, but I haven't really jumped on board yet because it seems like a lesser Fallout. And it takes place in Russia. But the things that they're doing now with like the crafting system and like you can make your own armor, you can make your own guns and like all this stuff. And there's zombies involved, which they call like the Horde. So yeah, I'm interested in this game. There's a little bit of controversy surrounding it because it was supposed to be on Steam, where most PC games are. They pulled it from Steam and put it on Epic, which is like Fortnite and all that stuff. So PC gamers were super pissed about it because Steam is kind of like our go-to shop where we go to like buy all games. And
oh yeah, right.
And they put it on Epic, which is doing Fortnite. Now, did you know, Richard, second piece of news,
yes.
So put a button on that. I'm interested in that game. It's getting really good reviews, and they're saying that there's a lot of, like, I'm not kidding, like Russian Twitter bots or like Russian bots who are flooding Metacritic with positive scores for this game.
That's bizarre.
It does take place in Russia, so that makes sense.
Okay.
Keepspiracy.
Boom.
Secondly, did you know this month Fortnite's revenue is down 48%?
I wonder why.
I wonder why.
Yeah.
I wonder why.
Yikes.
So Apex is still crushing it, but that's awesome. The other game I'm looking forward to, if you're looking into like simple arcade games, I love the Trials games, and there's a new Trial. You know, have you played the Trials games with the dirt bike? You know,
yes,
jump
I
up
did.
On stuff.
Yeah, I so did. I did play the Trials games.
There's Trials Rising just came out this week.
All right,
bunch of customization, really cool tracks. Something I'm looking looking into right now. If you like those games, I think it's Red Lynx makes those games.
Okay, cool.
Yep. So check that out, and we're done.
Oh, and new Overwatch character coming out.
Oh yeah, we just found it out yesterday. Baptiste, which
yeah,
I just saw as right before we started this, I looked at his kind of skills.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Healer, right?
Very interesting. So
healer?
he's a healer, but also like he's like a DPS healer. So it's
oof.
Think of like Soldier, but more of a healer, which is awesome. So he has like a, you know, like Ana has the grenades that like,
yes. Yeah.
So
yeah.
He can, has a grenade launcher on his gun that shoots like health grenades.
Oh, okay.
He also has an ability where he can, you know, a Winston, it's like a Winston shield, but it's an invulnerability shield. And it's like super tight, so you can like put like three people in it and they can't get hurt, which
oh, that's
is awesome.
Pretty, that's pretty sweet. I'm gonna have to get back into that.
Yeah, and his ultimate is he puts up like a wall, like think of like a Reinhardt shield.
Yeah.
But you can shoot through it, and whatever you shoot through that, be it healing or damage, gets amplified.
Oh,
so if
boy.
You shoot through the wall, like your bullets like are amplified.
Wow.
So it's very, a very versatile
unfair.
Character.
He seems kind of unfair early on.
Seems kind of unfair, but the purpose of this is they're trying to break the meta. They're trying to break what professional teams have been doing for like the longest time. And it's the games, as you know, the games become like pretty boring.
Well, yeah, you start to get certain formulas that are like, all right, that's.
Yeah. And the formula that's been working is three supports, three tanks. And that's the thing
oh,
that
wow.
like most pro teams have been running with. So you have like a Lucio, a Moira, and whoever, like
Ana,
an Ana,
probably.
And then
yeah.
you have Winston, D.Va, Reinhardt, and that's like what every team runs.
Jesus,
so, yeah. So it's
a little heavy.
It's real heavy, but that's they're trying
yeah,
to get more mid range, like kind of like versatile flex characters in the game. So Baptiste is their answer to that. And that was way longer than I tried to keep it under a minute, and you sucked me back in.
It doesn't matter.
That's why you make the big bucks.
It's Ryan. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Ryan, let me ask you this. Are you ready for the topic du jour?
I'm so upset with you right now. I can't even think straight. What do you want to do now? What is this?
It's just the topic of the day.
All right.
It's just a funny way of saying it, but it's the topic of the day. And today, True Detective Season 3 just came to an end this past Sunday. It was on HBO. It was 8 episodes, all about an hour long. The last one, maybe about an hour 20 or so. Like we do with all movies and TV shows, we'll go spoiler-free to begin, then we'll go full spoilers. So spoiler-free. Here's just a quick little plot for you if you haven't dove in yet. The story takes place in the Ozarks over 3 separate time periods. In 1980, partner detectives Wayne Hayes, played by Mahershala Ali, now 2-time Oscar winner, and Roland West, played by Stephen Dorff, investigate a macabre crime.
Macabre.
Involving 2 missing children. In 1990, Hayes and West are subpoenaed after a major break in the case. And then in 2015, a retired Hayes is asked by a true crime documentary producer to look back at the unsolved case. So unlike season 1, where they go back and forth between 2 times, they have 3 different times for this one.
Mm-hmm.
But before we unpack all of that, Ryan, let me ask you, did you like it?
Oh, yes, I did.
I did as well.
Oh, yes, I did.
I really liked it. Now, did you love it?
I did. I loved it.
Oh, see, I think you like it more than I do then.
Yeah, I loved it.
Okay.
And for reasons we will tell, or shall be foretold.
Yes. What stood out to you the most about it? Because there's one very specific thing that stood out for me.
What stood out for me and what was kind of the beauty of the first season was that they wove kind of 2 stories together. But it was done mostly through like your straight flashbacks. You had, you know, Matthew McConaughey's character telling a story to police officers. And then as he's telling the story, it would cut back to that. You know what I mean? So it was very straightforward. This, what I loved about this, and you know me, master storyteller.
Guy loves Rob story.
Andy.
I love stories.
How it weaved, it was like a 3-man weave. Like it was like weaving stories in and out of each other through like kind of this broken mind of, that's not a spoiler, but of
nope,
Wayne
no.
Purple Hayes. who in his old age has dementia. So it's weaving these stories in and out, which I thought it was done seamlessly. Which
it
was
real
awesome.
Seamless. And it was, you know, but 80 and 90, you know, there's a clear difference. There's like a haircut difference. Yep. And they do a great job making him look. That's where the whole 10-year challenge thing, which was super popular, like back with episode one, that was going making the rounds on Twitter.
Yeah.
That was really easy to tell. So you weren't like, well, wait a minute, he doesn't know this. And you're like, no, that was super easy. And then obviously you jump another 25 years, that's just
super easy.
Obvious. But yeah, what stood out to me was that feeling of season one, those scenes of McConaughey and Woody Harrelson together, I think to me are still better than, but Mahershala Ali and Stephen Dorff, who was like the most surprising, really strong actor.
Yeah, he was great.
Like Ali is great. He was ridiculous. And I think if this exact same story was told with a different actor, it wouldn't have been as good. Like that's how much he stood out to me. But Stephen Dorff kept right up with him. It was almost like watching McConaughey in the first season where I'm like, I know who McConaughey is. I've seen his movies. I didn't realize he had this in him.
Right. I mean, it's like Mud was kind of like one of those ones that he did that good of acting in. And obviously Dallas Buyers Club. But
that was after, right? Wasn't it after? Dallas Buyers Club? I think Dallas Buyers was after. Anyway. I could be wrong. But either way, yeah, those two guys were fantastic. And they're essentially in every scene. Like, or at least one of them is in every scene.
Right. And like you said, both of them are anchored with like ridiculous performances. So McConaughey in the first season and Woody Harrelson does a great job. Like Stephen Dorff does a great job of being like the, you know, so just an awesome, awesome show.
What do you think of the overall story of it?
I like, without getting too spoilery, I kind of sniffed out one of the major plot points early on.
Okay.
And I was still like, okay, I want to see if I'm right. Like, it's, you know, like sometimes you like I get like you watch like a horror movie and like I know who the killer is like halfway through the movie.
Yeah, sure. Sure.
Sure. And this one I did, but like, and you lose interest. Like this one I didn't. Like I wanted to see if I was right and I want to see how they played it out.
Well, it's so interesting too, because the way they bounce around from times, you're trying to say, all right, well, just when you're making progress, like in 2015, you're like, well, wait a minute. Like he's still asking questions about something. So then you're like back to 1980 and you're like, well, I know he doesn't know the answer or does he? Right. Yeah. And like, you're kind of like, you're twisting yourself around and there's like, there's one overall kind of like point again, which we'll get to, but then there's a bunch of little side details,
right?
Like there's a little like, oh, he has a secret about something or he did this, but it's like trying to get to one thing. So the story was good. The acting was obviously great. I think how it compares to the first two seasons, we've already sort of said it's in the conversation with the first one. It blows season two out of the water. So if you watch season two and you gave up on season two, forget it, throw that, you know, away. Rachel McAdams was good. There were some okay other parts along the way, but overall that was very disappointing.
Yeah.
This is a sweet bounce back.
Well, so I think, you know, the problem with season two, as we discussed before, there's like, basically you have four main characters when you really just need two.
Two's the sweet spot for,
you know,
the show.
Cause you had Colin Farrell, you had Rachel McAdams, you had Vince Vaughn, and you had, Tim Riggins.
Tim Riggins.
Whose name we're just going to call him Tim Riggins because that's who he is.
And like,
I think it's Taylor Kitsch, but like Rachel McAdams was awesome.
Rachel McAdams was really strong.
Colin Farrell
had his moments.
Yeah.
He was pretty good. Vince Vaughn, who I love, was just out of place.
He's not a bad guy.
No, he's not. He really isn't.
Like, yeah. But anyway.
So anyway, I would say season one's better. Season one, though, I probably gave a 6 out of 6 to. So, like, I really liked season one.
Yeah,
I think that it was going to be hard to top. But as I was watching, I'm like, oh, man, like, this thing's got a chance. It's in there. But, and I got to rewatch season one, too. But I just, my thought is this is good, borderline great, but it still, to me, doesn't touch season one.
And to me, the reason I give this season the slight edge is because I feel like season one, again, this might be a little bit of a hot take. I thought they did a little too much with Woody Harrelson.
Okay.
When McConaughey was actually the thing. Now,
McConaughey was great.
Woody Harrelson's character, not to keep our male listeners involved, some of the best nudity on cable I've ever seen.
Correct.
True Detective season one. Woody Harrelson was responsible for all of that. His character, anyway. But like, I felt like his story was
no
kind of
nudity
like,
in this. I don't think was there
that?
Nudity in this. Was there nudity in this season? I don't think so.
No, think not so. Really. I think you saw a male tushy, maybe once
perhaps,
or twice.
Perhaps a tush.
Yeah. But yeah, no nudity, but the story didn't call for it, which is fine. But I would get so I felt like Stephen Dorff's character was a little more understated, was more of an actual support to Mahershala Ali's character, which I felt was a little bit better. The story was a little cleaner, you know?
Yeah. What would your hashtag dork score be then for this season?
5.5.
Okay. Because I was going 4.5. Maybe I could go flaccid 5.
You know? All right. Yeah. Tube sock 5.
I think I'm right there. Because I definitely liked it. And, you know, I'm not afraid to give a 6. So I would maybe say season 1, just that 8 episodes was probably a 6. This was below that, but definitely good. So anything else, I mean, obviously we both recommend it. Go if you haven't watched it, it's on demand. Check it out. Let us know what you think. Anything else non-spoiler you want to hit on? I think some of the side characters were good. Obviously, yes. Ali and Dorff are the main ones, but the other characters, no real weak links. No, like, ugh, this guy sucks, or this girl sucks, or this kid. So they're all pretty good.
They're all pretty good. I was getting tired of the one character that I think it was intentional that you're not supposed to like her, but the mother of the children, Lucy.
Yeah.
Anytime she was on screen, I was like, ugh. Like, I just, you know, didn't. Or, and her brother or the cousin or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, those two losers. Like, that was, eh. But that served a purpose. We'll get into it in spoilers.
All right, here we go. Spoilers, 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 spoilers for season 3 of True Detective. What was the thing that you picked up on right away? Or, like, the plot point that you thought you figured out?
That the mother sold the kids.
And yeah, okay.
It was in the note. She said, you know, she said to Mahershala Ali's wife, who was writing the book, and it was in the ransom note that children should laugh. Like, they both said that.
Like, so that's really one of the overarching points of the entire, like, 2015 run,
yeah.
Is that Purple Haze had not read his wife's book. And had he read the book, there were so many details that he really could have figured out. Like,
right.
From
so
there.
The one at the end. Yeah.
Because he must have, I'm guessing, like, just thought that, like, the information is, like, what he told her. But clearly she also did other work and talked to other people.
Right. And there's whenever she's talking to somebody who is, you know, involved with this crime, that this unsolved crime, she never tells him about it. Like, she goes to the woman right. who made the dolls. She goes to Lucy and talks to her about that. And it's so funny that these two people are in such, they're working, and they make this point of saying in the last episode that, like, our whole relationship is this case, because they met when he was working this case.
Exactly.
And she was getting involved. She was a teacher of one of the kids, the brother. So, like, this whole, but they never talked about it. You know what I mean? Like, they existed around it, but they never talked about it. Like, she wrote this best-selling book, and he never read it. And there was information in there that had he read it, he would have come to that conclusion a lot sooner.
Right. And there's a few things in there too. And then even like the crazy thing at the end, which I guess we can get into, but like, it goes to show you, it's another one where even when you think like, is this a wasted scene, or like, what are we doing here? Like,
yeah.
I don't know if every single one of them paid off, but like certainly way more than in most shows, you know,
yeah, but
when they come back to it.
And this is one of the things I really liked about this show, is they kind of like threw you like curveballs sometimes. Like, there was a whole thing with,
it's almost like the finale really is like an ending, and they explain to you what happens, which is fine with me. But then there's sort of like a double ending, you know,
right.
Or like, in a way, like a triple ending. Like, here's how it ends, but here's also maybe what could have happened. Because they don't even really confirm, like, that little dream that he has.
No. And the other thing, too, that really threw me is, like, his relationship with his daughter. Like, they alluded to it. You don't see her a lot. And she's clearly an adult now. But, like, you think, in your mind, you're thinking, like, something happened with those two. Like, something bad happened. And it turns out, like, nothing really did. You know, like, they're fine. Unless I missed that.
No, I know. And like, the relationship, I mean, the two most important relationships I would say in the whole show are Wayne Haze with Roland and Wayne Haze with Amelia. Like, those, that is the whole thing. And the one with Amelia, like, what an odd relationship. And it was like kind of hard to figure out where they were too. Cause like, I feel like just when you were getting a sense of like what they were like together in 1990, they jump back to 80, and then she's obviously dead in 2015.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go back to 80 and you're like, well, wait a minute, like, are they together? Like, did they divorce? Like what was going on there?
But then there was that one shot where he was like working as like the campus security guard and she was teaching at like the university.
Oh yeah, that's right.
There was
whatever year that was.
It was like an in between shot, and it was only one shot. So like that you're like, weird. Okay, that ties that up. They were fine. You know,
that was weird, but that was also so messed up because he's obviously kind of blaming. He wouldn't throw Amelia under the bus because like so obviously she writes the book and they come to him and they're like, listen, you gotta write your own little thing, or at least, you know, we'll write it and you'll sign off on it, and saying that like she made it all up. And
right.
He wouldn't do that, and yet now he's like he's working a desk for like years and years and years,
which is crazy. And then like you would think that they, and you see him have that interaction with her when they're talking about like how he wouldn't sign it, and he's like throws her stuff and's like, get out of my house. You know what I mean? And then the next scene, they're like, he's basically proposing to her.
He proposes.
So it's a super weird relationship, but you think it's a relationship that's going to fail, and it doesn't. Like it's, you see that it kind of goes on after that. And there's that whole scene with when they're sitting at the VFW or whatever, and he's having the drink, and there, he's basically trying to tell that he killed a guy, and then he's like, I'm quitting. So from that moment
Why were you burning clothes into that barrel again at 3 a.m.?
And he's like, I'm not telling you because first of all, I can't tell you that. And she basically stops. And remember, he said like she stopped writing that book for personal reasons.
Right.
And it all had to do with the Hoyt guy being like telling him and telling her to stop.
Yeah, that's right. And what about the reveal of Edward Hoyt being Michael Rooker?
I knew as soon as I heard him on the phone, I knew exactly who it was.
Yeah, that's true. He could hear the voice.
And he has that voice.
You eventually see him later on. No, that's true. The relationship between Hayes and Roland obviously is, I think, just the best and really well done. But also, you know, Roland brings him back 10 years later to bring him back on the same case. And then it's really messed up when they get reunited in 2015. They hadn't spoke, right, in like 25 years.
Yep.
And then they had, and then it was just like, I don't know. Like, it's tricky because I sometimes in movies get a little annoyed with like memory loss kind of angles.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And like, I'm obviously aware that like dementia exists. It's the worst. Dementia is awful. You know, Alzheimer's, all that stuff is terrible. But it was weird to me to have them literally try to like solve this case now. And they were like super old, like on top of the dementia.
Right.
Like, were they almost too old for you, or you didn't mind that?
I'm like, no, I think that, were they like in their 70s, maybe?
I would say at least.
Yeah, so, but you, and it's funny, too, because you think that, in your mind, you go to that place where, like, Stephen Dorff's character is Roland is like this asshole, who's like, but you find out, like, he tried to help him twice. You know what I mean? Yeah. There was that time where they wanted him to sign that press release. He said no. He became the typist. Then 10 years later, he brings him back and he's like, I'm doing you a favor.
Right, because he moved up the ranks because he just did pretty much what he needed to do. But he was able to bring him back and bring him on that exact case again.
And then he fucked up again. So he's like.
But then he helps him again. And then he's moving in with the guy at the end.
Someone's going to watch him.
He's like, I'll bring the. You know? He's got a million dogs. So, you know, I love him. I'm like, that was just fantastic. And he's like, I'm going to live with you a couple nights a week. And then, you know, Purple Haze's son, who is the dude who plays Cyborg in Justice League.
Yep.
He was pretty good. But what was also interesting was, and I think I might have watched this in one of the, like, behind the episode type of things. You know, like, at the very end, they have, like, the director or the producer talking about it. And one of them was kind of proving out, and I kind of suspected this, but I wasn't 100% sure, that the reason why the reason why Wayne Hayes decided to do the true crime documentary thing was probably one to see what they knew.
Yes.
But on the other hand, also specifically though, what they knew about him, because he had gotten away with that murder for decades.
Yes.
Right.
And he wanted,
like, I think that was also what it was like, all right, well, you guys also have additional information, but is like any of that on me?
Right.
And clearly it wasn't. They didn't know.
He got away with that one. Both of them did.
They both got away with a kill there. But it was crazy. There was a different twist on it too. And like, I had just seen Abducted in Plain Sight, and I had just watched some other documentary. And then so as I'm watching True Detective, I'm like, oh my god, again with the child molesters. Like,
yeah.
Here we go again. And so this is a little bit of a twist on it, as you find out that the Hoyts, and you knew the Hoyts were super shady, like every time they were like mentioned and brought up in the way the town is, but you find out that the Hoyt had a husband and a daughter that got into a crash, And then so she just loses her mind. And, and they even say, like, sad, like the guy with the one eye, it's like she was sad, but like sadder than you would be.
Right.
And so she spots the kid and is like, I basically want like a new daughter. So as far as we know, none of them were molested, but it didn't seem like that's what it was. Like they just would kidnap them and then perverts would go to the farm. That's what I thought.
Yeah. And that's what was I really liked about it. And my wife and I were talking about it. Like if they went down like the pedophile ring thing, like it would have almost been, it would have been almost been too easy. And they even bring in, they bring in McConaughey and Harrelson. They bring up that story to kind of fake you out.
So by the way, that is the what I'm looking for. If it's a shared universe, you don't have to be so over the top aggressive with it. Like I didn't need McConaughey to swoop in and be like, hey, like let's solve this crime together. I didn't need that. But if you have a little like newspaper clipping all like shown on a computer of McConaughey and Harrelson talking about what they did from season one, all in. Love that. So we know that they exist in the same universe. That's perfect. That's all I was looking for the goddamn MCU to do with the Netflix characters. That's it.
Just mention
them. That's it. Be like, how about that lunatic with the machine guns and the skull on the chest in New York? That's all I needed. One time.
And Richard, let me ask you this. So one and the other thing, the thing I found about the pedophile ring stuff too is like it's almost it's a shock for like shock's sake. Like, oh, we're messing with kids. You know what I mean? Like that's gonna put people on edge immediately, no matter because you're a human being.
It's the worst thing. It's the worst thing.
You go, and so
it's
you
like,
go,
all right, here it is.
But
that's all we got.
What I loved is that at the end of this whole thing, she's fine. Like, that's the shock ending to me. And the whole thing is like, she's fine. Yeah. Like, she got married. She has a daughter. She has a nice house. Like, her husband, like, owns his own company. Like, there's like, she's fine. And like,
and so that's definitely her, right? You think?
I think that's definitely her. I think so. I think
because he basically he came to that conclusion though, talking to his like ghost wife, right? Like that's where he got it. But I assume it's also because he had been reading her book. He had also been going through his old notes. He had been talking to the true crime lady. He had been talking to Roland. So maybe all that together, he came up with that.
Mm-hmm. And he saw the little girl at the convent who looked like her. Her name was Lucy, which was her mother's name.
Right. And then he drives to the house.
Yeah.
Do you think he really forgot why he was there?
So my wife and I went back and forth on this one too. Like, was he pretending?
Yeah.
I don't think he was, but like that would have been like, I don't know. I don't think he was.
Well, it's hard to say really, but I wonder, cause as soon as he drank the water, he like looked at him differently. And not that that's how that works.
You know,
like,
yeah, you know that's not how dementia works. You don't drink water, you're fine.
Imagine if it was. Just keep drinking water, please, for the love of God. Yeah. But that I thought something kind of clicked in him. And that's why I wonder if at any point while he was talking to them, if he realized what it was. But he was like, all right, they seem fine. Like, why do I need to bring this on him?
Yeah, like she seemed fine and she didn't want to like rock. He didn't want to open that can of worms again and like freak her out. But maybe he just like gave her a look and being like, I know. And like there was that scene where he's sitting on the porch with his family drinking tea, which we all want to get to that point in our lives, don't we, Richard? Where we're sitting with our friends and our family having a sweet tea.
That's all I want. Actually, I go unsweet tea.
You just go straight tea?
I know. I'm sweet enough.
Oh, you did it.
Yeah. I don't need it. No, but the other thing was like what a great callback to the scene in the early episodes where Amelia is talking to the kid at school about the girl, right? Yeah. And who ends up we think anyway, ends up being the husband and the father now, but she's talking all to him and she's like, "All right, well, all right, she's just getting like intel, I guess, here, but like what is this the point of this?"
Right.
And then that ends up having like a real payoff to it. Cause like my point before about the finale and then sort of the twist. So like it ends and basically it's just like revealed, okay, like how much the biological parents were really involved, how much they knew, who actually killed the boy, which we find, you know, it's an accident, but they killed the boy, and then where the girl had been staying. So you get that whole reveal and you're like, oh, okay.
But even then when I got that one, I was like, that's a little too clean for me.
No, it is. And you're like, well, wait a minute. Like, I know there's like 20 minutes left. But so there's all that. And you're like, all right, well, that's nice. But then like, what else? And then like the nuns kind of throw you for a loop because they're like, oh, there's her gravestone. Like she came in here married like May, July, like just like summer. And then like, nope. Like they threw you off.
Now, did that young nun, did she have a tattoo on her face? Or is it a birthmark?
I couldn't tell. I don't. It might have been a tattoo.
It looked like a tattoo.
Like they were very accepting of.
Yeah.
Because didn't they say that she had like AIDS? Isn't that what they said?
Well, I think the idea was like they sold them on this idea that like, okay, you know, like, yes, she was picked. She'd done some things in her past and she wasn't happy with them, but she did. She tried to do the best she could. And like, that's an easy, especially given the time period, like that's a very easy thing to be like. AIDS was rampant in the late 80s, early 90s. So like, that would have made HIV and AIDS. So like that would have made sense.
Well, so the whole thing too, where you see her on the surveillance tape and like that drove Hayes nuts, you know, like they saw her on the surveillance tape. And then, so then he also brought it to the father, you know, cause the father was a real mess in this.
Yes.
Tom Purcell, played by Scoot McNairy.
He's a grown man going by the name Scoot.
His name's Scoot. Yeah, his real name apparently is Scoot. But so that whole thing too, where so you're like, all right, so she escaped, or like what was going on with her? Because then there was that other scene where they were like, remember they had the audio of her, and she was like, tell her to stop looking for me and everything like, else. Like it was.
But remember there was that whole thing where like she was being fed lithium the whole time. She didn't really know who like people were. So like that the woman Isabel who said she was her mom like could have been lying to her and saying like that guy isn't your dad, you know?
Yeah. Oh, so that's sort of like Sharp Objects.
Right. It's like she had been like fed these and she didn't know, because remember there's like a whole thing, she didn't know who she was.
Right. Okay, so that makes sense. So that's where they got the recordings from and everything else. But so then, and then she escaped, and then the dude with the one eye who...
Mr. June,
they were talking about him like episode 2 or 3. And then ultimately comes back to him. But what was weird too is, so this guy obviously had like a bit of a guilty conscience, because remember he went to Amelia's book signing?
Yes.
And was like screaming at, like ranting and raving about it. He's like, you don't know what happened to the girl. And you're like, what is this guy's problem? And then it turns out he knew exactly what happened to her. And then he helped her escape.
Mm-hmm.
But that was also kind of weird where he's just like, all right, like punish me. And they're like, no, we can't. They're like,
they have like guns and badges. And then he hits them with the, we don't have the authority to bring you in.
That was really good. And that was really good.
Yeah. He's like, I don't want to live with this anymore. I'm like, well, we've been living with this our whole lives. So
basically. What did you think? And I thought this was a nice touch, especially for like the modern, well, close enough to modern 2015 time, was the Elisa Montgomery, who was the true crime documentary filmmaker.
Yes.
Like, there's just so many of these goddamn documentaries now.
There's so many. And like, people love this stuff. Like watch like NBC or CBS on like a Friday night. And they call it what they call like murder porn. Like that's all over the place. I blame Making a Murderer for all of this.
Yeah, I think the combination of Making a Murderer and Serial have gotten everybody just crazy for it.
Yeah, and whole Jeffrey Dahmer thing, and yeah.
What was the one? Ah, shit! Those three kids that they said, and they did three kids that they said killed other kids. And they were like teenagers, I guess, that killed these kids.
I can't remember.
They thought that they did. And then they did documentaries like 3 separate years. Oh my God, it's going to drive me nuts. What was the name of it?
Slender Man.
But anyway, yep, you pinpointed it. It was Slender Man. anything else? Anything from the other characters stand out to you? I thought the son did a good job like for that character. Again,
he was good.
Who plays Cyborg. He was good.
The one character that I thought was involved with it, that they threw me another okey-doke, was the DA. I thought the DA would have had something to do with it. You know what I mean?
Mm.
Mm-hmm. The guy who played Harris James, who was the guy who was the cop who was like planning evidence, and all, I thought he was really good.
Yeah.
And they killed his ass.
They did. Oh, this is it. The Paradise Lost was the name of the series.
Okay.
I don't know if you saw that, but those were crazy.
No, I knew of it, though.
Anyway, so that was nuts. Let's see. What else? Was there any other twists in there? No, I think mainly, like, because at one point before they reveal it, they suggest that Hayes has a secret. And you're like, all right, well, what is this? And, like, how long has he kept this secret? And then it ultimately is... the guy that he murdered, and so Roland was there for that, so he was on board.
Yeah, because they kept mentioning like what you know what we did, you know what we did, and you're like you're waiting to see like what they did, you know.
So it sounds like you liked the finale, because that was another thing that was going around on Twitter, was like a lot of people were kind of split on whether they liked the finale, which they also said the same thing about season one. You remember season one wasn't unanimously loved finale.
Right, because that one was kind of weird. Remember they like Woody Harrelson like busted him out of the hospital and they were like looking at the stars. It was like super weird.
It was really weird. And I just remembered, like, to me, the first seven episodes were even better than this one. And so, like, it was just such like a, all right, how are they possibly going to top themselves? And then they kind of didn't.
Yeah. Oh, so this one, and again, like the most shocking ending you can have in a story, like a true crime story like this, is like, she's fine.
Yeah. Like, leave her alone. Right. Yeah. That's probably as crazy as you can get.
Like, what's scarier than something?
Than what's, well, nothing. What's scarier than nothing? Well, I something. Don't know. Something.
Yeah.
Something has to be.
No, but like, yeah. But to me, I mean, I think that was the best way you could end it, was be like, no, mm-hmm. she figured
that's
it out.
A good point.
Like, she, and she's, honestly, the whole point of her going to live with the Hoyts was she was going to get a better life. And she did it. Just not in the way they thought that she was going to, but she did it, you know?
Yeah. So just, wait, explain this to me again. So the father was not aware,
he was
right?
not aware of it. No. And remember there was a
but
whole thing like he was, he could have been gay. Like he wasn't their real father.
Right, right,
especially
right.
Especially hers.
Now, did they ever pay off the that one room at the Hoyt, not the Hoyts, at the kids' house or the Purcells?
Yes.
Did they ever pay off the, like the hole that was in like the door?
Were, so you could, like, the kids see were it? Like passing notes through the hole.
Oh, that's right. You're right. Yeah. It was notes. That's right. They did do that. Because that was the other thing where I'm like, oh my god, like is it kids and stuff like pedophilia?
That's the thing,
again?
Like the
I'm
whole
like,
thing.
I can't
you're like,
deal with this.
Is it more pedophile stuff? Because that like, seems like an easy scare for everybody.
Yeah,
and they're like, no, that it wasn't that.
Fear.
It wasn't that at all.
That was a real pleasant surprise. Now it was still a grown woman drugging a child. But
so that's
like,
bad.
What? So that's
selling
horrible.
Children is bad. We're not saying seriously. That's okay.
Definitely terrible. But for what we know, none of them were sexually assaulted.
Right.
Right. Oh, also the who they pinned the child murder on the first time around,
oh,
that was
that
a pretty wild scene.
I really liked that
That's,
guy.
Well, it did suck. That guy was great.
Yeah.
But that was a pretty crazy scene. Like when they finally got to his house and then he made Wayne kill him.
Yeah.
That was messed up.
Mm-hmm.
That was really messed up. But that was still, Brett Woodard.
Woodard, yep.
The trash collector who was a Vietnam vet. That was pretty crazy, but they were always just trying to like, case is solved. And like Hayes is like, no, that's not
like,
him.
No, like, no, it's done. We're done here. Stop.
And that was pretty good clues too. When they went to visit the guy who was working at the Hoyts and they're like, yeah, you're the guy that found the backpack.
Yeah.
Like you're just like, what the fuck is up
now
with
you get,
him,
now you
sir?
Get this really cushy, like six figure job, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was really cool too. And like, you know, once the Hoyts went away, like the town died. So like there's a vested interest in all the people involved in the town that like we need to keep them here because they're basically own the town.
Yeah. Pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty good, Ryan.
It's a great,
anything
it's a good show.
Else?
It's
oh,
a good show.
Do you want a season four?
Yes.
Let me pitch something to you.
Sure.
Michael B. Jordan. And he plays every character.
Who would you cast as your next True Detectives?
Honestly, it'd be Michael B. Jordan and yeah, it's got to be. You know what? Like I think what you could do. I kind of like this pairing in the sense that you have one guy who is like red hot and is in Oscar movies and is like an Oscar winner, and then you have another guy that you're like, oh shit, like he's still making stuff, and then he puts in a performance like that. So maybe Michael B. Jordan could be like my Mahershala Ali version, like a guy who's in all these current movies. And then like, I don't know, Brendan Fraser.
Or or like somebody who's like a known entity who's like who can kill it as an actor or actress who you haven't heard from in a while.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm trying to think who that is. Like somebody that like Quentin Tarantino would bring back.
Like what if you had, I'm just spitballing here. Like what if you had like a throwing it out there, like a Jodie Foster.
How about this? Jodie Foster and Carrie Coon.
So I'm saying.
That would work.
Or like you go
that'd
like Michael B. Jordan and Jodie Foster.
Ooh, that might be good.
See what
so
I'm saying?
Forget the, you can't do four. It's got to be two. It's got to be two main characters for sure. you could go guy girl, you could go two girls, you could go, because they haven't done that yet. And McAdams was so good.
Here's a good one. Ready? If I'm going, I'm on a guy girl thing right now.
Okay.
Tom Hardy, Hillary Swank.
I'm listening. Ooh, that's good stuff.
See,
that's good acting chops. That's good acting chops. Let me ask you this: does season four have to involve missing children?
No.
Let's hope not. Let's do something
season
else.
The one and three did, two didn't. So that's where we are.
I know. So maybe you do have to.
You do have to, or maybe it's
it's when the stakes are the highest.
And I feel like that's what people are like. Detectives, especially, are most invested in is like children. You know, I think that's the idea. The well you go back to all the time is like, what can everybody gather around? You know, you can't do like a 8-episode season of like missing puppies. People would get behind that. People would be especially
love puppies. I'd be too sick. I'd be too sick by wondering if they were getting the nutrition. I couldn't do it. What if this? What if they were trying to stop a group of big game hunters that kept killing elephants?
I mean, you might have something there.
And then you got to stop them because like the tusk trade is through the roof and everybody's like, they're moving tusks.
You know what I love though about Nick Pizzolatto is like the guy who's the guy who you see after the episodes who wrote, who's like the showrunner, this whole thing.
Oh, he's the main dude, but I got something on him in a second too. So go ahead.
He writes, you forget that there are like these places in America that like nobody fucking goes to.
Yeah. I mean, he does a good job.
He writes those places better than anybody.
Yeah, he is really good at that.
Like, when will you ever in your life find yourself in like Northwest Arkansas? Like, never.
I will never go there.
Never.
I will never go
like,
there.
I don't want to go there.
I won't. Yeah. I've been doing some reading, and it sounds like season one was so good, but he had other people working with him, and like, it was his baby, it was his whole thing. But then season two, he had like almost all control.
I think he directed some too, which might not have been the best.
Oh, he directed some of this season too.
Yeah, so I think he figured it out. Yeah,
he directed episode 4 and 5. That was it. And
now, let me ask you this:
co-wrote all of them, which is fine,
which is great.
But I think co-writing some of them and handing off the direction was also important.
Let me ask you this: for any and all dramatic series on cable moving forward, even on Netflix or any streaming service, I kind of feel like 8 episodes is the sweet spot.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right.
Because I was just interested enough and I was like, okay, I'm starting to like get into the end, which is nice. I think eight episodes is the sweet spot.
And hard to bail on 8 episodes.
Exactly.
You know, like if you're 4 in, like, cause you know, I want to see how things are going to end. I'm curious like a cat, Ryan. So yeah,
That's why we call you Whiskers.
That's right. They have for years because I want to see how these things are going to end. So we certainly want a season 4. You guys can hit us up on Twitter at Dork Podcast or email us dorkpodcast@gmail.com. Let us know what you thought about this season. Davey gives it a 5.5. I give it a 5. A soft 5. Mm-hmm. Let us know what score you give it. Also, let us know what your perfect season 4 pairing would be. I think maybe Carrie Coon, Michael B. Jordan might be my duo.
I don't think you could handle that.
I don't think I could either. I don't think that'd be tough.
You know, we haven't heard from him
about the show. Who's that?
What about like Denzel?
Oh. Denzel would be great.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think of people who are mega stars who we just like haven't heard from in a while.
Tom Hanks?
I don't think this is a Tom Hanks thing.
Joe Pesci. Harvey Keitel.
What about
Robert De Niro and Al Pacino?
Directed by Martin Scorsese. You know that? Remember The Godfather? Huh?
I sure do.
You know?
Could you get Bobby Duvall?
What's he doing?
What do you think? I don't know.
How about this? I'm going to blow your mind.
Yeah. All right, I'm sitting down.
Scott Conn? James Conn. Boom.
Yeah, not bad.
Little father son. You have James Caan, this prolific actor, and his little leprechaun son, Scott.
How about Alec Baldwin? Billy Baldwin.
Everyone but Stephen.
Stephen Baldwin.
Nope, we don't want Stephen.
No, all right. Yeah. No Stephen Baldwin.
Oh,
that's
man.
It probably it. All right, Ryan.
Let's do it.
Let's go to the pick of the pod.
Pick of the pod.
Pick of the pod.
Pick of the pod.
Pick of the pod. kick, receive, defer, or you may also defend a goal.
I will receive this one.
Oh, go ahead.
Out of character for me. This is the easiest pick of the pod I've ever had. So much so that I'm going to throw in a supplemental one. If you haven't read, you're not a reader. If you haven't read Nick Pizzolatto's Galveston, which is a book, a novel he wrote. If you like True Detective, check this book out. It's an awesome book. Just check it out. If you like his stuff, you'll like this. Yeah. And the easiest one today, Richard, I pre-ordered it. It's just sitting there waiting for me. It's staring me in the face. Today, Into the Spider-Verse is available to download on digital. So I bought it. It's mine now.
That's nice.
I have it forever.
Oh, good for you. Yep. Congratulations. That is really nice. That is really nice.
Arguably the best comic book movie ever made. Arguable. You could make the argument.
Arguable? It's on the short list. I would still put...
It's in the top five.
Let's see. I would still put Guardians 1, Dark Knight, and Logan all ahead of it. Then you probably got a conversation. I liked Infinity War better.
It is, I will say this.
It's in the mix, though. There's no doubt.
It's the best Spider-Man movie.
I like Homecoming more.
Tom Holland is the best actor to play Spider-Man. Correct. I will give you that. Spider-Verse is the best Spider-Man movie.
And you know who was also in Spider-Verse?
Who's that?
Mahershala Ali.
Yes, he was.
How do you like that?
Nick Cage.
Pick of the pod. Yeah. Pick of the pod. So Mahershala Ali also going to factor into my pick of the pod. I know I mentioned it several times, but I haven't had it as a pick of the pod yet. But Green Room, check it out. Let me know what you think. Let me know if I am an idiot for enjoying this movie. But I liked it. I thought it was great. I came away having a nice time, and I thought he was really good in it. Viggo Mortensen was really good. Linda Cardellini was very good in it as well. So check out Green.
Lindsay Weir.
Green Book.
Green Book. Check out Green Room too.
Watch them both. Kidding me?
Oh, Richard, I have one more pick of the pod.
Yes, please.
They just announced that they are going to release the entire collection of Spider-Man Noir in one book.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
So there you go.
And, of course, check out the latest episode of Mac and Goo, where you can hear Davey and I dominate another movie draft.
Yes.
All that is for you. Next week, Ryan, I got to check ahead. It may be another free play.
Email? Mailbag?
Mailbag. Oh, actually, you know what we also have to do? Dork Madness 4.
We got to fill out
the field for Dork Madness 4, so we can get into that. Maybe we can even talk about it as the episode.
Quest for Peace? Is that what that one is?
That's it. Dork Madness 4. A Quest for Peace. That's what we're going to be doing.
There we go.
And hopefully we'll find it at the end of the day. You can rate, review, and subscribe on the iTunes hashtag Dork. I already gave you the Twitter, the email, youtube.com/DorkPodcast. Oh, that would be another pick of the pod. Go to our YouTube channel. Chris Scheim, our buddy Scheim Time, who has hosted on this before, he did a 6-minute recap of season 1 of Game of Thrones, and it is fantastic.
And now I will tell you this as a spoiler, gang. I've heard stories about Chris Scheim. He did this, I'm not kidding, no script, from memory. True or false?
Oh, he's insane. He's one of these guys. He did a Pokemon episode on Mac and Goo. He went in there, and they were just drafting Pokemon. He went in there with no notes and knew all of their stats and ridiculous names. Yeah.
He also, again, I think he did, you told me, he did the whole Game of Thrones 6-minute recap with no notes.
Yeah. Just sits down and crushes it. Yeah. So that's pretty good. And
so that's
Ryan,
something.
You can check it. Yeah, so that's strong. And I added a bunch of pictures to it. So I tell you to go onto YouTube and check it out. It's very enjoyable. And he's going to be doing them for every season. He's going to be released first on Mac and Goo on their podcast on, I think, Fridays. And then I'm going to try to upload it to YouTube. I don't know if we're going to do the whole picture montage every time, but I'm at least going to put it on our YouTube channel, getting you ready for season 8, the final season of Game of Thrones, which comes around April 14th. That'd be a week after our live show, which is at Idle Hands. Ryan, you can find you twitching.
Find me twitching. We're going to get back on a regular schedule soon. It's been kind of the up in the air. Things are in flux. We're trying to figure out, we're trying to nail it down, when the schedule will be. I know it's not been very regular, but they've been enjoyable, but you had a nice time.
You had
but
it.
But you had a good time.
Nice time.
I'm working. So
if you follow Davey at R Von D, he'll also tweet out when he goes live. So you can usually just click it from there too.
I'm also messing around with a website called Rabbit, which you can actually, I can play a movie and have like a camera on me, and we can chat and talk about the movie as we're all watching it, instead of just like sitting there watching me talking about the movie.
Oh, that's a good idea.
So I'm working to see how that whole thing works. So we'll get something going.
All right. Ryan, another perfect episode, sir.
Nailed it.
The results are in. Great conversations are always on par. So follow and listen to On Par with me, Maury Povich, wherever you get your podcasts.